We read in 1 Peter chapter 5 where Peter, who is a fellow elder, and you think about Peter, who we understand that he was not a perfect man. He was a man that cursed and swore they didn't know who Jesus Christ was and had some other personal flaws, and yet he was perfectly devoted to Christ, and because of that, he was able to grow. Peter says, I exhort the elders among you as your fellow elder and witness of the suffering of Christ and a partaker also of the glory that is to be revealed, to shepherd or to tend or pastor the flock of God among you. The elder's oversight is limited to the local church. Exercising the oversight, that's what they are to do, their responsibility. Not under compulsion, but voluntarily, according to the will of God, and not for sordid gain, but with eagerness. Yet not as lording it over those allotted to your charge, but proving to be examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the unfading crown of glory. Now notice verse 4, when he talks about the reward of an elder, he says, when the Lord returns, you will receive this special crown, because the Lord has a special appreciation for these shepherds who attend God's people to help them go to heaven. Some of you probably have never heard of Jim Iansen. You probably have heard of the movie Apollo 13. Apollo 13 suffered an accident on the way to the moon that very well could have ended in disaster, but because of the skilled ingenuity of Mission Control in Houston, they were able to bring them back safely. I remember that. I think it was in elementary school. We were able to watch that on TV. And Jim Iansen was a member of the Lord's Church there in Pasadena, Texas, and he also served as an elder of the congregation there. That's the congregation where Dee Bowman preaches, and he was one of the flight controllers on that mission. He received a presidential citation for that. When he was asked, is this the greatest honor that you have ever received? He said, no. Being an elder in the Lord's church is the greatest honor that I've ever had. Because we're dealing with souls that are bound for eternity. And that's what 1 Peter chapter 5 verse 4 says, that you'll receive this unfading crown of glory. The Lord will be pleased that these under shepherds brought his people safely to heaven. In this text here, their function, they have certain functions that they are to perform. That is to tend, to be an example, to feed, to guide. And therefore, there are qualifications that make sure that they are competent to do their job. And I want you now to be turning to 1 Timothy chapter 3. And sometimes when we read these qualifications, divorced from function. And when you do not read things contextually, sometimes we don't get a clear view of what is being taught. But 1 Timothy is parallel to the verse that Daniel read for us in Titus chapter 1 that gives a list of qualifications or a snapshot of the kind of man in his character and ability that he has demonstrated among God's people and in the home, that he's demonstrated leadership qualities with his family, and therefore he's proven his leadership ability as well as his character from being observed by other Christians up close. I want you to read with me in 1 Timothy chapter 3, verses 1 through 7. And basically, when you read these passages, these qualities, and you're thinking about men in the congregation, people should come to mind who have these qualities to an exemplary degree. And they have these qualities to the point that they motivate us to want to follow them. Okay? So we read in 1 Timothy chapter 3, verses 1 through 7. It is a trustworthy statement or faithful saying. If any man, so he has to be a male, aspires or desires the office of an overseer, it is a fine work that he is to do. An overseer then must be above reproach, the husband of one wife, temperate, prudent, respectable, hospitable, able to teach, not addicted or at wine, not pugnacious, but gentle, peaceable, free from the love of money. He must be one who manages his own household well and keeping his children under control with all dignity. Notice verse 5 about the idea of the function. He's proven his effectiveness. If a man does not know how to manage or rule his own household, how will he take care of the church of God? And not a new convert so that he will not become conceited and fall into the condemnation incurred by the devil. And he must have a good reputation with those outside of the church so that he will not fall into the reproach and the snare of the devil. Now, in verse 11 and verse 10, he talks about testing these men. He's talking about deacons, and I think that applies also to elders. They must be tested and then serve if they are beyond reproach. Verse 11 says that the women, and these are the wives of church officers, must likewise be dignified, not malicious gossips, but temperate, faithful in all things. So when you read this passage, you're not only thinking of a man, you're thinking about his wife, that she has to meet some qualifications, that she is a faithful Christian and a faithful wife as well. Notice the apostolic qualifications given to Timothy, that he has to be a man because this is the leadership role that God has ordained that men should fulfill, be leaders in his church as they should be in the home. And it says that he has to aspire or desire this work. That is a qualification because you remember in 1 Timothy 5, he says you're to do this not voluntarily, not under compulsion. Sometimes a congregation, maybe they only have one, they have one person that's clearly qualified, or we got to find another one to have a plurality, and maybe you'll twist somebody's arm into doing it. Well, you couldn't find anybody else, and so I'll do it. Well, that's under compulsion, and that is unscriptural. Because notice, it's one of these qualifications, he says, he must be above reproach, must meet these qualifications. Also, it may be that if a congregation grows real large, you need more overseers to keep up with the flock. And so there might be pressure put on someone we really like you and we think that you're qualified, but for whatever personal situation, you may think, well, I really just don't desire it. So that's something that the individual has to determine. You have to desire it, of course, obviously, for the right reason. But he says it is a fine work that he desires to do. So the idea of appointing someone as an elder is a work that involves making decisions, but it also involves personal involvement in the teaching program. It involves personal involvement in attending to the spiritual needs of every member. So we're not looking to fill a slot. We're not looking for just to have some men who will mainly make some decisions in a business meeting with the other elders, that it is a comprehensive work. We appreciate the good work that the elders are doing here, but we want men who are willing to work, and it certainly is a work. There's a lot of things that you don't see that the elders have to do behind the scenes that is a work that they do, and of course it's a labor of love because we're doing it for the Lord and we're doing it to save souls. But this is something that is a noble work to desire because I want to be, why do we want to do it? Well, as we read in 1 Peter chapter 5, that you do it not under compulsion but eagerly. Romans chapter 12 and verse 8 says that he who leads should lead with diligence. Because we're doing it for the Lord, for his work, because he's done so much for us. Jesus exemplified servant leadership. It wasn't the kind of leadership of a harsh, dictatorial kind of leadership, but it was a servant leadership of love. And so out of a desire to please the Lord and gratitude for what he has done, that should be the motivation that someone would want to serve to help God's people to move forward. Now when it says that he must be above reproach, I was talking to someone, and sometimes in the past, some people see that particular qualification, above reproach, as basically has to be perfect. We're looking for sinless men. Well, if we're looking for sinless men, we're going to have to keep looking, because John says, he who says he has no sin is a liar, and the truth is not in him. If someone even professes that, there's a religious group, they believe in the second work of grace, or entire sanctification, where you get to the point that you never sin. John says you sin in the very process that say that you never sin. Christians are not sinless, but they should sin less and less. What this means, blameless, means irreproachable. The Greek word means cannot be laid hold of. It means he is not engaged in the impenitent practice of any particular sin. That's what it means. Doesn't mean that, oh, I remember one time 5 years ago he did this. Anything that he might have done that he made correction for should be the exception and not the rule. Okay? So, we're looking for men who, if he's above reproach, if he did sin or made a mistake, that he was willing to make correction of that. So he is someone who is not involved in the impenitent practice of sin. Then it says that he is, and also I wanted to say, when he talks about he is above reproach and not engaged in any sin, when you look at the qualifications of elders, this is a snapshot of the kind of men that we want, and you use the rest of the New Testament as far as maybe dealing with other sins or also the other characteristics of a Christian that he should have, because he's to be an example to the flock. But it says that he is to be the husband of one wife. The Greek word there means a one-woman man. That would exclude a bachelor, and it would exclude a polygamist. It means that he is scripturally married to one woman. That's the only, of course, scriptural arrangement that God has ordained. And involved with that is that he is a good leader with his wife. Robert Jackson was preaching in a, well, he was went to a congregation in Kentucky somewhere, and he was talking to the elders about moving there to work with the elders and the church. And they asked him, he says, well, is your wife very friendly? And he said, well, she is to me. Well, the first thing when you're looking at an elder and how he relates to people, how does he relate to his wife? And, of course, some of that relationship is something that is not seen. And so, to be honest, the husband and the wife have to be honest with one another. Is he the kind of husband that loves her as Christ loved the church, that he leads by sacrificial leadership? So what kind of example is he in loving and leading his wife? I'm going to talk about tonight different questions that come up. Can an elder that he's been, if he's scripturally divorced and remarried, is it okay if he serves? If he has a wife that has died and he's remarried, is it scriptural for him to serve? I'm going to deal with questions like that tonight. But what this verse is saying, that he is a faithful, exemplary husband in leading his wife. And also, the next qualification, you'll look there in 1 Timothy, it says that he is temperate. One translation says self-controlled. The King James says vigilant. And the word there, temperate, is used in the metaphorical sense. It's the word underlying means abstinence from wine, used here in a metaphorical sense, means he is free from the influence of intoxicants. That means he is clear-headed, that he is a clear thinker, and that he is not unduly influenced by any other outside force. To be temperate, self-controlled, clear thinking means he's fair, balanced, and objective. He can take facts, weigh facts, and make a decision based on the facts. Sometimes there's pressure put on an elder if, let's say, family members are involved and maybe they're not being faithful, or maybe there's someone in the congregation that's their personal friend that's involved. There's always the human tendency to have partiality. But when he's talking about being temperate, he is clear-headed, he is fair-minded, self-controlled, and he is vigilant. He is not unduly influenced by outside influences. The next qualification, according to the New American Standard, is that he is to be prudent. The American Standard says sober-minded. The Christian Standard Bible says that he is to be sensible. And that just simply means that he is wise. That's one of the reasons that they are called elders. That means older, wiser, mature. If he is prudent, he is able to know what is needed in a congregation. And you know, part of wisdom is you know how to take the lessons that you've learned from the past to apply them to the present. Sometimes over time, if a person is not personally growing, they kind of live in the past, and they may think, what worked in the past? What we need to understand, of course, are the Scriptures, but we also have to understand what is needed in the church today, right now, in our particular situation. I remember working with a congregation, they were talking, we were full, and talking about expanding the building. And this one particular fella, and he had been an elder a long time, he's talking about, oh, I remember, you know, the little kids, they would sit on the floor, and they would do this, and we would put chairs, and we were just jam-packed like sardines. And I think that's before they enforced the fire code or whatever. So he says, we have plenty of room for people to sit. Well, that was maybe back then, but I don't think that's going to work right now, because generally when people come and if they can't sit together as a family, they're just going to go someplace else. And you can't get little kids to sit on the floor. Maybe there's a few little kids that like to sit on the floor and play, but the point is that you have to look at what is most effective today, and that's the idea of wisdom and prudence. It also says, the New American Standard says, that he is to be respectable. The American Standard says orderly. The King James says of good behavior. It means he is well balanced in all areas of his life. So that means that he has to have more than just a lot of Bible knowledge. He's able to take that Bible knowledge and to integrate that into a well balanced life. That is wise and perceptive in all areas of life. He is in control of himself. He has his life in order. That means people will want to follow him if he is a well-balanced Christian. Next it says that he is to be hospitable. The Greek word means lover of strangers. The idea is he loves people. He cares about people. He wants to get to know people. He is a people person. A shepherd smells like sheep because he spends time with the sheep. Hospitality, extending what is needed to minister to the personal needs of others, whether it's having someone in your home or spending time with them in some other venue, basically means that you are a people person. This man is someone who likes to spend time with people. So when the Bible says in 1 Peter chapter 5 that we are to be hospitable without complaint, in 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 9 rather, we are to be hospitable without complaint. All Christians are to be hospitable. Well, that means he would have to be hospitable to an exemplary degree so people will want to follow him. That Jesus said that the sheep, that he calls the sheep by name and they know his voice and they follow him. So to be an effective elder, he has to be someone who is willing to spend time to get to know people and to get to know their needs. And that's why hospitality is such a practical, good trait for them to have. Next, Timothy says that he is able to teach. The King James says apt to teach. It's not merely the technical ability to teach, but it involves apt to teach means the desire to want to teach. He is eager to teach. You can't keep him from teaching because a spiritually minded person who cares about the souls of other people want to communicate that with other people. He is an able teacher, the Christian Standard Bible says. If you'll look at the parallel passages there over in Titus chapter 1, and you should have a sheet that have the qualifications listed on the front and the back from different texts. Titus chapter 1 in verse 8 and 9 says that he is holding fast the faithful word, which is in accordance with the teaching, so that he will be able both to exhort in sound doctrine and to refute those who contradict. So he's someone that knows the Bible, and also he knows current issues that are going on, so he can protect the flock from false doctrine, and he can exhort and encourage so they can apply that in the practical growth of a Christian. This can be done in a class. This can be done from the pulpit. But it can be done privately. It can be done just out in the vestibule talking to someone. Someone may be talking to them about a particular situation. And a Bible verse comes to mind. And they share that with them. So in practicing hospitality or going visiting in a restaurant, you think about the example of Jesus. When Jesus was in all kinds of different situations, Jesus would always look for opportunities to bring up spiritual lessons that could be applied. So that's the heart of someone who wants to feed the flock. They want to teach at every opportunity to encourage people in Scripture. Okay, then it says that he is not, the New American Standard says that he's not addicted to wine. The New King James says not given to wine. The Greek word means not at wine. That can be taken two ways. That's a matter of interpretation. Does it mean he's at wine some, or does it mean he's at wine a lot? I want you to turn with me. I think that this means that he's not a drinker of alcohol, and I want to show that to you scripturally. The Bible does not commend the moderate use of alcohol for social drinking purposes. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 6 and 7, 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 6 and 7, "So then let us not sleep as others do, but let us be alert and sober." All right, that word there, sober, it's used in a literal sense. Nepho means abstinence from wine. "For those who sleep do their sleeping at night, and those who get drunk at night." Notice that he says, those in the world, they sleep and they get drunk. We are to be alert and sober. Sleeping and being alert are the opposites mentally. And then he talks about sobriety versus drunkenness. So here he's talking about literal drinking of alcohol. When the Bible talks about sober, it's used in a literal sense. Nepho means to not drink wine. Abstinence from alcohol. So the idea, he's someone who is not given into the common vices of our time, that he's someone that's not unduly influenced by alcohol. The next qualification, if you turn back over to 1 Timothy chapter 3, says he is not pugnacious. Not violent, the NIV says. Another translation says not a bully. I think the King James says not a striker. That doesn't mean, when it says not a striker, it doesn't mean that he couldn't belong to a labor union. Okay. Not a striker, not pugnacious, means ready with the blow. Someone who is emotionally volatile and is ready to strike back at somebody. And pugnacious can mean physically, but it also can mean verbally as well. And of course, this would also relate to the idea that he is not to be soon angry, that he doesn't have a hair trigger temper. When I first started preaching, there was a fellow who visiting with me, and he was an insurance agent. He said, one of my associates went by to see one of our elders about some insurance policy, and he said that the elder told the insurance agent if he didn't leave, he was going to beat him up. And I said, well, that just doesn't sound right. Surely he wouldn't say that. So we'll just talk to him. So after church, we approached this particular fellow, and he asked him about the situation. This elder, all of a sudden, his face got really red, and he got very angry. And I could say, oh, we just stepped into a real sensitive situation here. And, of course, he had some ongoing disputes with this particular insurance company, and he was upset about that. But what happened in a particular situation, when things did not go the way that he thought it would, he was very angry about that. And he didn't have control of his temper. And of course, you know, elders have to deal with different kind of situations, different delicate kind of situations, and they have to be in control of their temper. And also that they have to be comfortable in their own skin so that if someone questions them, or they have to deal with difficult people, that they don't succumb to the common human trait of wanting to get back at somebody because you hurt my feelings or you said something that was unfair or untrue. So he can't be easily upset, nor should he intimidate people to try to retaliate, to get back at them. In contradistinction to not being pugnacious, the New American Standard says next that he is to be gentle. The King James says patient. The contemporary English version says he is to be kind. Therefore, he needs to have good people skills in dealing with different types of people. He has good one-on-one skills, and he can deal sensitively with the different kind of issues that people have in their life. So he would be the kind of person you would be comfortable talking to about a personal problem. Such that if you were to tell him about some personal problem, he wouldn't go, oh, I can't believe you. And so, that's why I came to you to talk to you about this. So you don't want someone that's going to be just shocked and maybe just get totally discombobulated when that you tell them some kind of problem that you have. He is someone who is gentle, patient, kind. That means he understands that people have problems and he's willing to work with them in a very sensitive way. Then in the New American Standard says the next qualification that he is to be peaceable. American Standard says not contentious, not quarrelsome. Again, this shows he has to have good people skills in the dynamics of the congregation. He has to be concerned about the overall welfare of the congregation, and not particularly if someone has some particular pet issue that they want to push. He has to be concerned with what's best for all of the members. He is a peacemaker, and he's able to deal with problems in the congregation and resolve problems in the congregation. Being peaceable does not mean you sweep things under the carpet. Sometimes when we say the church is at peace, actually the church is dead. You know, someone just hadn't come and preached their funeral yet. And so sometimes people are just passive. They don't disagree about anything. And then there's some congregations and some people that they just like to argue about a lot of different things. Now, they don't think you're being a faithful Christian if you're not arguing or debating one particular scripture or another. Here's an elder who recognizes reality, but he is able to deal with situations and problems and resolve them in a peaceable way. Next it says in the New American Standard, he is free from the love of money. The King James says he is not covetous or not greedy. He has to be someone who obviously would, because he's over the church, there's possibility that he might be tempted to take some money from the church, and of course there's checks and balances on that. That shouldn't be a problem. But in our materialistic world today, the elder has to realize that what he does takes time to shepherd the flock. And that means that he has to take time to do that. Therefore, he will not be able to spend long, long hours doing secular work, because he's going to have some time to do the work of an overseer. The church up in the Louisville area, they had the elders would divide up each month different duties that they were going to do. There's one particular elder that when they came to the meeting, he was in the habit of saying, "No, I just didn't have time to do this. I didn't get around to go visiting this person," that kind of thing. And I think this situation, he was too busy in his business trying to make money. And finally, the elders very correctly said, "Well, if you don't have time to do your work as an elder, if you don't have time to do this, then you just don't have time to be an elder." So an elder has to be able to have the time to do the work that is needed. If he's too busy with his job and trying to make more money than maybe he needs to make, then he will neglect his work. Then it says, if you look at 1 Timothy chapter 3, verses 4 through 5, that he manages his own household well. He has his children under control. What this means is that he's elder, which means he's older. That means he has children who are growing, and we're going to talk about the number of children that he should have and about do all of them have to be Christians. We'll talk about that tonight. But it basically, when you, the saying is, an apple doesn't fall too far from the tree. And when you can look at a child and you can get an idea of what kind of teaching and what kind of discipline and what kind of example are they seeing at home. And so the children are a reflection of the discipline and the leadership that they are receiving at home. So basically, how well is well just means that it is to an exemplary degree. You know, someone is saying, you know, you've heard the saying that insanity is inherited. You know, you get it from your children. The idea is that there's challenges there. You've got these little people that come into the world. They're totally dependent upon you. And then all of a sudden they grow up and they have their own mind and they have their own personality and they want to be their own person. And so there's a transition period from being totally dependent and to being totally independent. And that's going to be challenges. Well, how does he manage that? He's the kind of person that you would want to go to him about advice on rearing children. Then it says that he is not a new convert, or the American Standard says not a novice, which again indicates he has to have experience, So he has demonstrated the qualities of a Christian over a period of time so you can observe these things. So he has the maturity to handle the temptations that may come to a position of leadership. It goes on to say that he must have a good reputation with those that are outside the church. He sets a consistent, good example so people realize that he's the real deal. He's a genuine Christian, that people look up to him. Now, let's look at Titus chapter 1, verses 5 through 9 very quickly. There are some that are unique to Titus. Even though they're different, they're describing the same kind of man. Titus chapter 1, we'll look at the qualifications that are a little bit different than 1 Timothy that relate to the same kind of person. 1 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 5 and following says that he is not, this is in verse 7, he is not to be self-willed or not arrogant or not overbearing. The idea of self-willed is the idea of my way or the highway, of being stubborn. This is just the way we're going to do it. Well, it says that he is not to be self-willed. When the elders are to lead as servants, as Jesus led as a servant, that they serve the greater needs of the congregation, not necessarily even what they would personally like, but they have to look at what is in the best interest of the congregation. They're not quick-tempered or not soon angry, which is the idea he has control over his passions. He doesn't flare up. It says that he loves what is good, or the American Standard says that he is a lover of good. This trait means that he is someone who is passionate about spiritual things. I appreciate the elders here that they like getting feedback on different ideas that will help move the work forward. Some places, you know, you don't find that because sometimes it's easy just to maintain the status quo. And someone has said the status quo is Latin for the mess that we are in. You stay where you're supposed to be making progress. The church is supposed to be growing. Therefore, if he loves what is good, he is out front in promoting good things that are scriptural, that promote growth and edification of the local church. Then it says that he is just or upright or righteous. When it says that he's just, he always wants to do the right thing. You know, doing the right thing is not necessarily the popular thing. And the saying is, if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. A person who is just or upright or righteous, realize that we're all going to stand before God and give an account of how we have acquitted ourselves and handling His Word and fulfilling the responsibilities. So in dealing with church discipline, that may not be something that's necessarily pleasant to do. In fact, anyone that enjoys doing it is not qualified to do it. But the reason that we do it is we want to save your soul because you're going in the wrong direction. And also treating other people, that he doesn't treat people unfairly. He is not partial to one group of people and overlooks the needs of other people, but he treats everyone fairly and equitably because he is just or upright. And he's always concerned about doing the right thing, not the convenient thing or the easy thing. Then it says that he himself is holy or devout. To be devout or holy means he is inwardly dedicated to God. He's continually growing. He's passionate about spiritual things. And how can you tell if someone is passionate about spiritual things? Well, when you spend time around them, what are the things they generally like to talk about? Does the discussion generally or often get around to discussing spiritual things, things that are going on at church? Or is it almost always secular things? A spiritually minded person, a devout person, a holy person, they're going to have inward purity and dedication, and they'll be passionate about spiritual things. And then the last one we'll look at Titus, is it says he is self-controlled, or the NIV says discipline. The Greek word means strength. It means he has the power to control himself, self-mastery. And part of that, and this is important, in being an elder, you have to be organized. In other words, in dealing with the teaching program, in delegating things to the deacons, in who has different needs, and so no one falls through the cracks, elders need to be organized. They are in control of themselves, of their time, of their talents, of their schedule. They have discipline or self mastery. They have a handle on their duties. Now, we'll conclude very quickly, if you'll turn the page there. The Holy Spirit's imperative of selecting only qualified men. In Titus chapter 1 and verse 7, it says that, in Titus chapter 1 and verse 7, notice what he says, "For the overseer must be above reproach as God's steward." They are going to be entrusted with watching over the souls, helping people go to heaven, helping people to be faithful. And they are to be blameless as God's stewards. So these men have to be honest with themselves. Am I where I need to be in my spiritual life? So that maybe there's something secretly I'm struggling with. Maybe it's not time yet for me to do this particular work. I might look okay from the outside, but if I have some glaring fault in my life I'm struggling with, you need to realize that you have to be above reproach as God's steward. Not, that doesn't mean sinlessly perfect, but it means not engaged in impenitent sin. And also it says, you remember in 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 10, a verse that we read at the beginning of our lesson, that what is our responsibility? Well, in 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 10, when he's looking at deacons, and this applies to the elders, these men must first be tested or examined, and then let them serve if they are beyond reproach. That is, they're clearly qualified. There's a consensus they are clearly qualified. We have that responsibility to test and examine so we can affirm, we support, we encourage these men. We believe that these are good men. We believe that they meet the qualifications. We need to realize that we're all in this together. We need to appreciate the good work that the elders are doing now, but they need some help as we look forward to helping the church to grow. And we want to fulfill our responsibility. In Acts 14:23, when they appointed elders in the church, it says they appointed them with prayer and fasting. With prayer and fasting. The spiritual life of the church rises and falls on its spiritual leadership. And where the church will be 5 years, 10 years, 20 years from now will in great part depend upon the spiritual leadership that we choose to have here. And that's why we want to be prayerful and dedicated and praying for wisdom and searching our Bibles and thinking about men that we can talk to about serving in this great work.